Support comes from St. Louis Public Library Foundation, helping the library serve children and their families with programs and services needed to become lifelong readers. More information about the foundation is at slpl.org.
We hope you enjoy listening to this podcast of St. Louis on the Air, brought to you by University College at Washington University. With undergraduate and graduate programs, part-time, evening, and online. University College at Washington University, offering world-class education within reach.
Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. There was a tremendous upset in Tuesday's election here when Wesley Bell defeated Bob McCullough in the St. Louis County Prosecuting Attorney's primary race. There's no opposition in November, so Bell gets the job. He's an attorney, municipal court prosecutor, a Ferguson city councilman, and former public defender. And he's with us in studio. Wesley Bell, congratulations.
Thank you so much, and thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to be on here with you.
Well, you surprised a lot of people. Did you surprise yourself?
You know, and as I was kind of mentioning before, you know, I've been in this bubble with my staff and supporters where for the last 6 months or so, we were determined and we and our mind was made up that we were going to win this election. And so that was the approach that we took. And as our supporters started to build and the momentum started to build, it for us, it seemed inevitable. But you know, now on the other side, looking at it with a little bit of perspective and a little bit of sleep, I do get it. I get it. I can see why it is a surprising and a big upset.
How much of an impact do you think your advocacy in the Ferguson story had to do with your win?
I mean, obviously, it had to contribute in some ways, but in some ways, there's two sides of that coin, and there's no way to tell if there were some voters who may have thought associated me in a negative light. But it appears that it seemed to be positive. But after Ferguson became Ferguson, if you will, and obviously we're on the anniversary of Michael Brown being killed. There has been more of an awareness for the need for criminal justice reform and addressing issues such as mass incarceration. And so I do think that that plays a role because as we are pushing our message on addressing those issues and expanding diversionary programs, and that gave us a boost as far as the platform because now more people understood and had a better foundation of what these issues were. And so when we started talking more high level, people got it. The light came on.
The electorate in St. Louis County, though, is largely white. I wonder if there's a message in that. I mean, you won by, 14, 15 percentage points?
Yeah. But, you know, Don, and we ran, you know, since I started into politics and just as a mantra through life, I believe in inclusion and working with people. And so we ran on a campaign of bringing people together, and we stuck to that. We weren't going to start with the the negative and mudslinging. We weren't going to do that. We were going to keep it positive. And win or lose, I'm gonna stand by that. And so I expected it to be for our supporters to be diverse, but I was also very pleasantly surprised. Even more pleasantly surprised at the amount of diverse support all over St. Louis County that we received.
I don't know if you were able to hear the previous segment talking about the Forward Through Ferguson report. Have you had a chance to look at that and all the excitement and turmoil of the last couple of days? And if so, what do you think of what they've come up with?
Haven't been able to focus that we've, you know, since the election, well,
sure.
First, you know, the election Tuesday, and then since then, interviews and things of that nature. And again, no sleep. And so over the next day or two, I'll start to be able to decompress a little bit and kind of catch up on what's going on.
Basically, what they've come up with is the fact that of the Ferguson Commission recommendations and priorities,
okay,
they were looking at 49 of them, and only 5 have been implemented since Michael Brown's shooting 4 years ago today. That's a pretty small number.
Yeah, and I mean, that just shows that the fight must go on if we're going to address these issues, criminal justice reforms, making sure that our courts are treating everyone fairly, and making sure that our law enforcement, that we're practicing community policing and getting out into our communities and making sure that based on your zip code or your economic status, that you're not more likely to see the inside of a jail. I mean, that's the charge. But I think there's a lot of people, and I think Tuesday's show, there's a lot of people that are in the fight with us. And I think we have to look at this regionally, and that's the only way we're going to move forward.
Well, some of the things that you've talked about and talked about a lot concerns the death penalty and cash bail and that sort of things. You've already alluded to that. My understanding is you will not seek the death penalty in any cases that would come before your office. Is that correct?
Well, two things that we know about the death penalty is that it is given disproportionately to African-Americans and poor people. And it has shown that it is not a deterrent, and it costs taxpayers an estimated $2 to $3 million more. And so, yeah, my office will not seek the death penalty. Now, having said that, those who commit and we're talking about murder in the first degree, they should, if found guilty, they should go to jail without any possibility of ever seeing the light of day.
And the cash bail situation is one that's been talked about certainly for the last 4 years with some volume. Are you, as a prosecuting attorney, are you going to be able to impact this at all in your job? Do you have the authority to change it?
Well, first I want to make sure, because politics, sometimes things get misrepresented. Mm-hmm. You know, we know that. That's politics and that's how it works. And so what we're talking about is reforming cash bail with respect to nonviolent offenders. Obviously, violent offenders have to be held accountable, and that's a different ball game that we're not talking about at this moment. So with cash bail for nonviolent offenders, we're talking about bail is supposed to ensure that someone appears in court throughout the trial, not for punitive purposes. And what happens is that the murderer with means is able to go free, while the drug offender who poses no threat to anyone can't afford to pay the $1,500 bond. They lose their job, because most of us don't have jobs that are waiting for you if you don't show up for 2 weeks or 2 months. You can lose your housing. A single mother, single parent can lose their children. And for a case that they are substantially likely to receive probation for anyway. So why are we incarcerating these individuals? So the judges do have the final say on bond. However, the prosecutor's office does have an impact. I've been practicing for 17 years, and I've presented or argued many bond motions. And when the prosecutor agrees, I don't think that there's been one time that the judge didn't also sign off. Now, when the prosecutor disagrees, I've had very few that didn't go in the prosecutor's favor. But at the same time, there are a lot of good judges in St. Louis County. And what we're going to do is just what we've been doing, that I've been doing throughout my career, is we're going to meet with them. We're going to talk to them. We're going to hear their ideas. We're going to share our ideas. And we're going to work together to do what's best for St. Louis County.
You were portrayed during the campaign as a man with little experience. You've just alluded to 17 years experience. Talk about that a little bit. I mean, you were a public defender at one time. That's experience, and it would seem to me that it's not too difficult to pivot to go from public defender to prosecutor. I mean, you're in court and you're dealing with issues.
Well, I started practicing in 2001. So even in law school, I interned at the public defender's office. And from 2001 to 2003, I worked under a mentor of mine, Robert Steele, who was the special public defender. So I worked in the special public defender's office. And so we handled cases throughout the region. So I got a chance to try a lot of cases and handle a lot of cases in St. Louis County, as well as St. Louis City and even regionally. And so in 2003, I opened my practice and I started doing primarily defense work, trial work. And so I tried a lot of cases. And then I began, I was given the honor of serving as a municipal court judge. Mm-hmm. I currently serve as a municipal court prosecutor, and I hit the criminal justice department at St. Louis Community College. And so I've seen the criminal justice system from all sides. And I think that experience, as well as my legislative experience on the council, will only benefit that office. But again, I intend to have the best and brightest around me. There's a lot of good attorneys in that office now, and I think a change of culture will benefit St. Louis County and keep us safer.
Well, yeah, you mentioned the staff now. I guess I hadn't even thought about that, but they must be wondering, what is this guy Wesley Bell going to be like? Shall we stay? Shall we leave? We've been with this other guy for 28 years. You're going to have to go in there and get acquainted with a lot of people very quickly.
Well, many know me. Not all of them, obviously, but I've worked with a few of them, but I know several in that office. And so I'm sure days after the election, there's some uncertainty there. But what we intend to do is make sure that our office is the best trained. We're going to set clear expectations and give everyone an opportunity to push in this in the same direction, because I think these are things, again, that will make us safer but also help people. And I think there's a really good opportunity. We have a really unique opportunity to change our justice system for the better, particularly from the prosecutor's office. But as I've always preached and will continue to preach, it's going to take working together.
I want to go back to your time as a public defender, if I can, and ask how you think that will inform your performance as a prosecutor.
As a public defender, I was a younger guy back then. I was 15 years ago when I left. But one thing that I will always take from that job is that I got a chance to focus on the art of being an attorney. I didn't have to worry about collecting money from clients. I didn't have to worry about the business side as I did when I had to open my practice. I got to focus on trying cases. And so I think that experience now with my managerial experience at the college and my office, my law office, I think that gives me experience right there in the trenches, trying tough cases, but also perspective. I think it gives perspective with respect to how my decisions as county prosecutor will impact not only individuals charged, but victims, and the need to make sure that victims are treated with dignity and respect and informed. And so I think that having the experience of administering justice as a judge will play into that. Administering it as a prosecutor on the municipal level will play into that. But also as a public defender and defense attorney, just giving perspective on the justice system from all angles.
Have you learned anything, do you think, from Kim Gardner's experience in the city? She's had some critics during the first year. She's gone through some very interesting times with the whole Greitens thing and what have you. But criticism for her lack of experience. Do you see anything there that will be helpful to you?
Well, I always try to learn from every situation. So I've paid attention to Kim, and I think that, you know, transition is often going to be tough, and so there's always things that that we can improve. I think that she's doing the best that she, you know, I think she's doing a good job overall. I think she's starting to put some things together, but it's always going to, you know, and I'll say this, Don, everyone has a day one, and none of us are going to be as good as we are day 200, day 2000. And so I think that we have to give her a chance. That's a tough job. And so, you know, we'll learn from others' mistakes and others' successes as well. But we're looking forward to hitting the ground running.
Bob McCullough had a pretty good relationship with the county executive, just reelected Steve Stenger. What's your relationship with him?
My relationship's always been professional with him. I have good relationships on that council as well. Councilwoman Gray, my friend Councilwoman Irby, who supported me, and Lisa Clancy, who's now on the council. And so I look forward to working with all of them. Again, what we're talking about when we talk about expanding diversionary programs and things of that nature, when we look at the opioid crisis, I think that's something we all can get behind. That literally addressing that issue literally saves lives and saves families. So I think that the conversations that I've had with them, they'll be on board with a lot of the things that we're doing.
I'm not sure everybody in the listening audience understands what the diversionary programs are.
Thank you for asking.
Yeah.
So diversionary programs are programs that divert people from the formal criminal justice process. In other words, instead of charging someone, you say, hey, this nonviolent offender, instead of giving them a conviction, we're going to have them do drug treatment. We know that 80 to 85% of individuals who come in contact with the justice system are in need of drug treatment or mental health treatment. And so instead of trying to prosecute our way out of addiction and mental health, we're going to start offering programs for nonviolent offenders. Again, we're not talking about violent offenders. We're going to start offering these programs for nonviolent offenders so that they can get the treatment that they need, because research is clear. Our biggest demographic of offenders are reoffenders. And when we give nonviolent offenders the type of treatment that they need, they are significantly less likely to reoffend. And that keeps us all safer. It saves us taxpayer dollars because it's significantly less than incarceration for nonviolent offenders. But again, most importantly, it helps people.
Yeah, it's the old story of the jail or the prison being a graduate school for young people or anybody who's being put behind bars.
And it's unfortunate that every one of us listening understands that analogy because it tends to be true. And so we have to make sure that we are giving people the tools they need in the toolbox to be better citizens, to be able to help their families, to be taxpaying citizens.
Sure. We have a writer, Madonna from Crestwood, writing, your plans will impact your conviction rate. While your programs may result in excellent outcomes, how do you plan to counteract the inevitable criticism that your office is less effective if your conviction rate falls?
Education, public engagement. I think that when I ran on a platform that we were not going to be all consumed with conviction rates, because that's why we see our diversionary programs operating at the lowest levels in the state. Because oftentimes what we find across the country is that with prosecutors, drug possession cases, that's low hanging fruit. It's easy to get a victory because oftentimes the only witness is an officer, and someone's thinking, okay, the jury or the judge is not going to believe me over an officer. So you get a quick conviction, easy probation, and so it makes your stats look good. But What I'm more concerned with is what are our crime rates, but what are our recidivism rates? Mm-hmm. Our recidivism rates currently are at 75%. So that means 3 out of 4 people who are coming through our justice system are reoffending. And so I would compare a 90%+ conviction rate over a 75% reoffender rate. That's not effective. And so, what we have to do is we have to educate people, because I think this is an excellent question. We have to educate people, let them know what we're trying to do so that there's buy-in from our community at large. And so when the next election cycle comes up and you see that we're helping people, we're treating more people, our crime rates are going down. And that's how I think we effectively counteract those political arguments.
That'll
be
a more appealing stat for you, you think?
I think so.
Very quickly, we only have a minute left. Aaron on Twitter says, Missouri reimburses local municipalities if individuals are found to be guilty. There's a lot of incentive for those guilty verdicts.
That is so true. That is so true. And that's why it's important to elect people who are not going to continue those types of things that that contribute to mass incarceration. Mm-hmm. Now, Texas is a great example. Texas, shockingly, has implemented some many diversionary programs and things of this nature. And as a result, they started having jails that weren't being used. So you know what they did? They started using them as treatment facilities. And so if we get to that point in Missouri where we don't need a lot of these jails, I think that'll be a good problem. And I'll take that as showing that we've made some progress
and save a lot of money
of money for taxpayers.
Wesley Bell, thank you so much for being with us. Congratulations once again on your win earlier this week. A big week for you and a big week for St. Louis County as well.
Thank you so much, Don. It is always a pleasure to be in an interview with one of the legends.
Thank you.
Thanks for having
a legend in my own mind. Thank you very much.
And a lot of others' minds, too.
Wesley Bell. Archived versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air, production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
and Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.